All glory to Srila Prabhupada. All Vishnu Vidaya Krishnaya Bhutalesha Pati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Mutanamani Namaste Saraswati Diga Ipura Vadi Vachani Vasesa Simani Gaskatyari Satani Mande Hum Sri Guru Sri Vitalapadakam Sri Guru Vaishnavanascha Sri Rukam Sadhurjatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Sumasajidam Sadvaitam Sadvaritam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Param Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitam Stra. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. In Soho in London, we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 24, Worshipping Govardhan Hill, Text 5. Udashino Rivadvarja Atmavatsu Riduchite.
Udashino Rivadvarja
Udashino Rivadvaja
Udashino Rivadvaja
Atma Vatsuriduchyate
Udashino Rivadvaja
Udashino Rivadvaja
Atma Vatsuriduchyate
Atma Vatsuriduchyate
Udashino Rivadvaja
Udashino Rivadvaja
Atma Vatsuriduchyate
Atma
Udashinaha. One who is indifferent.
One who is indifferent.
Arivat.
Arivat.
Just like an enemy.
Just like an enemy.
Varjya.
Varjya.
Is to be avoided.
Is to be avoided.
Atmavat.
Atmavat.
Like one's own self.
Like one's own self.
Srit.
Srit.
A friend.
A friend.
Uchite.
Uchite.
Is said to be.
Is said to be.
Translation in purport. So this is a continuation of Krishna's argument from yesterday. So just before we go on to today's. So yesterday Krishna told Nanda Maharaj, no secrets are to be kept by saintly personalities who see all others as equal to themselves, who have no conception of mine or another's, and who do not consider who is a friend, who is an enemy, and who is neutral. So that was Krishna's point yesterday. And now today Krishna is going to do something that he does a lot. He's going to say, this is the best, but this is the next, and this is the next, and this is the next. Krishna often gives levels and alternatives. So translation, one who is neutral may be avoided like an enemy, but a friend should be considered like oneself. So first Krishna said, treat everybody equally, don't make any distinctions. And then he's saying, okay, everybody can understand that you want to avoid your enemy, and you could even avoid neutral people, but your friends, they're like your own self. Atmavat surit. Atmavat surit. Rit means heart, su means very dear to. Atma means self. So someone who's dear to your heart is like your own self. Purport. Even if Nanda Maharaj did not see friends, enemies, and neutral parties as entirely equal, Lord Krishna, being Nanda Maharaj's son, was certainly a most trustworthy friend, and should therefore not be left out of intimate discussions. In other words, Nanda Maharaj might have thought that as a householder he could not act on the highest saintly platform, unless Lord Krishna furnished additional reasons why his father should trust him and reveal the entire purpose of the sacrifice. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, Nanda Maharaj stood silent, doubting his position of parental aloofness, since Garga Muni had predicted that his son would be, quote, equal to Narayana in his qualities, unquote, and the young boy had already conquered and killed many powerful demons. Udashino Rivad Varjya Atmavat Surichite. One who is neutral may be avoided like an enemy, maybe, but a friend should be considered like one's own self. So Nanda Maharaj is starting to question whether or not he wants to explain things to Krishna or not. Krishna's arguments are starting to have an effect. He's still being silent, but he's thinking, well, Garga Muni did say my son would be like Narayana, and he did kill so many demons, so maybe he's not just an ordinary boy, and maybe I can explain it to him. So Nanda Maharaj is thinking like this, and Krishna is now giving his next tier of argument. He's saying, all right, even if you don't see equally, I'm your friend. Not only am I your friend, I'm your son. I'm a very intimate friend. And friends should be treated like oneself. So this concept of friendship and treating a friend like oneself, we find throughout the Shastra, being a friend. What does it mean to be a friend? Friendship, of course, is one of the what? One of the rasas, and it's also one of the
items of devotional service,
particularly the which items?
Nine.
The nine processes. So we have a process of devotional service, just like yesterday Krishna asked Nanda Maharaj. What did he ask Nanda Maharaj? Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana. What is the purpose of your sacrifice? Who is it for? What's the relationship? And what is the goals already. What's the purpose? Process. What's the process? How do you do it? So how do you achieve bhakti yoga? One way is by becoming Krishna's friend. That's one way of performing bhakti yoga. And of course, Rupa Goswami gives 64 items of bhakti yoga, but those can be categorized into the nine. So becoming Krishna's friend can be understood in two ways. It can be understood from the platform of rasa, like Krishna's friends, or it can be understood in general, that everyone is meant to think of himself as Krishna's friend. Well, why don't we start with how Krishna's our friend? I mean, before I'm going to be friends with someone, I want to know what their relationship is with me. That's Krishna's whole point. To Nanda Maharaj, he's saying, I have a feeling of friendship towards you, so you should have a feeling of friendship towards me. So before thinking about how we can be Krishna's friend, we can consider how Krishna's our friend. And then we can look at how we can be Krishna's friend. And of course, if we're Krishna's friend, then who else are we a friend to?
Everyone.
And especially the devotees. So we'll look at those four categories. How Krishna is our friend, how we can be Krishna's friend, how we should be a friend to every living entity, and especially to be a friend to the devotees. So Krishna is our best friend. Most of us don't believe that. We may believe it intellectually. We may say, yes, yes, Krishna is my best friend. God is my best friend. But if you really believe that somebody is your best friend, and this is the argument Krishna is making here, what do? You trust them. Right? So if Nanda Maharaj really believes that Krishna is his friend, he'll trust him with this information about the sacrifice. We're not exactly sure why he's not speaking. Is he just doesn't want to waste time explaining high subjects to a child? Or does he think Krishna is just going to argue with him some more, which is exactly what's going to happen? Or what exactly is his hesitancy? But if we really trusted Krishna, then we would surrender. And if we surrender, then we would immediately completely come to the highest platform of devotional service. Sarva dharma pricha jagam lekam sharanam raja antam sarva papeja moksha ishanam asuja moksha. We would immediately be free from all of our sinful reactions, and we'd immediately be liberated. So if we're not liberated, and how can you tell if you're not liberated? What are the symptoms? What's a symptom of being liberated? Yes.
Fear.
Not being liberated is fear, yes. And in place of fear, we would be? Blissful. Brahma Bhutta Prasanatma, Nasamchuchi, Nakamchuchi, Sama Sarveshu Bhutteshu, Nad Bhakti, Lavadeva. We would be always joyful. And we wouldn't be thinking, what about this, what about this, what about this? Oh, why did I lose this? Why did I make that mistake? What about this thing that I need and this thing that I need? And am I going to lose that? Which is generally what the mind does, doesn't it? Isn't that what the mind's doing pretty much all day long? Yeah. I made this mistake. I wonder if that'll be okay. I said this wrong thing. I did this wrong thing. I could have done that. I should have done that. I would have, could have, should have. And that person should have done that. And why did they do that? And that was terrible. And I wish that didn't happen. And how am I going to hold on to the things that I have? And what do I have to do later? And what about tomorrow? What will I get? And will I get that? And will that be all right? So that's sochiti kanchiti. So liberation, you realize it's all a bunch of nonsense, and you don't bother with any of that stuff. And you're simply joyful. So that comes when we surrender to Krishna. So you surrender to somebody that you trust. Not surrender like what the Japanese did to the Allied forces at the end of World War II. We're not talking about that kind of surrender. You know, Hiroshima and Nagasaki had been bombed with atomic weapons, and there was no chance they were going to win, and they didn't want their whole country bombed with atomic weapons. They go, I surrender. And the Allies said, it has to be unconditional surrender. I unconditionally surrender. But, you know, it's not that they want to surrender. I mean, they're choosing to surrender. They'd rather surrender than have their whole country go up in a mushroom cloud. But, you know, that's not a very nice choice. Would you rather unconditionally surrender or have your whole country go up in a mushroom cloud of radiation? I guess I'll unconditionally surrender. You know, but that's not what Krishna's talking about. The kind of surrender that we're supposed to do to Krishna is the kind of surrender you do when you get married. You know, you don't really know what's going to happen a year from your marriage, do you? I mean, you know, the wedding vows, for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, for happiness and distress, you don't really know. You know, maybe the day of the wedding, your spouse will get hit by a car and be in a wheelchair for the rest of their life. You just be a, you know, mental vegetable. You don't know. What to speak of having children. You know, at least when you marry someone, you can check their horoscope out beforehand and get to know them a little bit. But when you have a kid, you don't, you have no idea what you're going to get. That's really surrender. Right? It's an incredible amount of surrender and love and trust that happens in situations like that, or even when you join the Hare Krishna movement. You know, you don't quite know what's going to happen, you know, 5 or 10 years down the road. But that kind of surrender. You know, okay, I don't know, but I'm going to trust. And we do that when we get a job. You know, we do that, what to speak of, if you join the military. Oh my God. You know, join the military and you go fight in some war. How do you know what's going to happen? But you're surrendering to your government. Or surgery. You know, a friend of mine was just diagnosed with cancer. And as soon as she got the diagnosis, she immediately scheduled some surgery to have a part of her body removed. You know, that's a lot of surrender. Okay, take your knife and take out something that I was using before and I needed. You know, and I'm hoping I'm not going to need it anymore. I mean, I don't know. I go to the doctor, and the doctor says there's cancer. I mean, I don't know. I can't read the x-rays and the tests, and I just trust. And I say, okay, I trust you. That, and they say, no, if you don't let us cut you open, you're only going to live another 2 weeks. And you say, okay, I'll do it. And then they say, well, now we're going to hook you up to this IV and flood your body with poison, and your hair's going to fall out, and you're going to vomit, and you say, sure. And surrender. Yeah. So that kind of surrender of trust, that's the kind of surrender we want to do to Krishna. And much more so, I mean, millions of times more than one does when one gets married or has a child or joins the military or gets a job or moves into an ashram. And you can always move out of the ashram. Nowadays, you can always get divorced. Right? You can always quit the military. You can always get to the hospital and say, change my mind. Oh, complete surrender. That means complete trust that Krishna is the friend. But why don't we trust that Krishna is our friend? What's stopping us from believing that he's our friend? Maybe that things don't always work out the way that we'd like. Is that our problem? You know, because we're thinking, well, Krishna, if you were really my friend, I'd never get sick. And nobody would ever be nasty to me, especially nobody in the Hare Krishna movement. I mean, if the people on the street are nasty to me, but somebody else living in the temple, I mean, how can you love me, Krishna? After all, you're letting it happen. That's what Dharma the Bull said. When Dharma the Bull was being beaten by the personality of Kali, the personality of quarrel and strife and sin, and Maharaj Bricket says, who's beating you? I mean, it was kind of a funny question because Kali was standing right there beating him. It was an odd question. Who's beating you? And Maharaj Bricket figured it out, even though Dharma the Bull never answered the question. And Dharma the Bull said, you know, I really can't say. There's at least 7 theories. That's what he said. And he listed all the theories. And Prabhupada says in the purport, why didn't he just accuse Krishna? And he said, because he was overwhelmed by illusion due to the age of Kali, and so he didn't even accuse Krishna. That ultimately, nobody can hurt us unless Krishna sanctions it. Prabhupada had a wonderful purport there, where Prabhupada says, and this is the solution, that the devotees never actually suffer. They don't experience any suffering because they see that everything that happens is coming from Krishna. Well, if we haven't yet surrendered, we're doing the opposite. We're saying, yeah, everything's coming from that Krishna, and he's the one causing my suffering, therefore I shouldn't surrender to him. Whereas if one surrenders to him, one sees that the suffering isn't actually suffering and one doesn't even suffer. So my godbrother Sridhar Maharaj, he used to like to say one saying from Buddha that pain is inevitable, but suffering is a choice. And unfortunately, he had a lot of opportunity to practice that in his life. He had serious diseases for many, 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 many years. So when he first said that to me, I thought, oh, this is just some sort of sentimental idea. Pain is inevitable, but suffering is a choice. So, of course, the catch is that you don't experience that until you surrender. And because we don't experience that, we don't surrender. That's the problem. Because my life without surrender is suffering, therefore I don't surrender. I don't realize that once I surrender, I won't have any suffering. That once I surrender, I'll actually be able to see that Krishna is my best friend and that everything he's doing is good. Maharaj Parikit, he saw the curse of the Brahmin boy where he was cursed, where Maharaj Parikit was cursed to die. It says he saw that Krishna had taken the form of that curse. I mean, if I can see that surgery by a doctor is loving, why can't I see that difficulties given by Krishna are loving? We can't all see that, right? Can't we see? Haven't we all had some sort of painful medical or dental treatment? Has everybody had in their life some sort of painful medical or dental treatment? But didn't we see that as loving? Didn't we see that as a caring act by the medical professional? And we voluntarily submitted to it. And in one sense, we really didn't see it as suffering, even though there may have been physical pain. We saw it as something beneficial. And one can actually experience the difficulties in life, not only, yeah, okay, it hurts, but it's beneficial, but even that it doesn't hurt. That one doesn't experience it as hurt. So that I see is our main reason why we don't see Krishna as our friend. Of course, there's a deeper existential reason why we don't see Krishna as our friend. And that is that we just don't want to. That I'd rather try to take Krishna's position, you know, rather than see that he deserves to be in the center. I want to think of so many reasons why Krishna doesn't deserve to be in the center. He's not worthy of it. I mean, this is the problem with the demons like Shishupal. You know, Shishupal said, Krishna's not worthy of getting the first worship. Of course, Shishupal was such an envious person. He waited until Krishna had gotten the first worship. He waited until all the rituals were done. And then he said, oh, this shouldn't have been done that way. He didn't even say anything at the proper time. So that if everyone agreed with Shishupal, if Shishupal was correct, it would have damaged the rituals of the sacrifice. But that's how he was thinking. Krishna doesn't deserve to be worshipped. For so many other people deserve. And who was he thinking really deserved? Himself. So he didn't say that. He said, oh, so many other people who are deserving. Huh. Or Pandraka, who said, Krishna, you don't deserve to be called Vasudev, and to have the weapons of Vishnu. I deserve them. I mean, he out and out said, I deserve them. So on a deep level, we're thinking, I am really the best friend of everyone. I really know how to run things. If the universe was in my hands, I would know what to do. I wouldn't be making such a mess of things. At least not my own life. Now, if I were God, I would make sure I had a nice life. I would make sure I had everything I wanted. And I'm sure I could give everybody else what they wanted to. No problem. So on a deep level, we really don't accept that Krishna is more qualified than we are. And if we understand that he's the best friend, then we'll have to reinterpret everything in the material world as something that's loving and caring. And we'll have to see, therefore, that I really don't know what's to be done and what's not to be done. Of course, all of us have ample evidence, at least I have ample evidence in my life, that I really don't know what's good and what's bad. Sometimes what I think is good for me ends up not to be good for me. Sometimes what I think is not good for me is good for me. And the same thing is true for others. Sometimes I think, oh, I have to do this particular thing. I have to. It's so important. And then I find out that doing that thing is actually harmful for me. Don't we all have this experience? So what do we know? I mean, do we really know how to manage everything? We see this even on a small level. You know, even in a temple or in a business where people are very critical of the authorities. And then if they get to be the authorities, well, you know, they make mistakes too. And people are critical of them too. They don't do everything right. You know, this is seen politically. The revolutionaries, they have a big scene and they take over and then somebody wants to throw them out. You know, in America, they're gearing up for elections. In America, we have elections every 4 years. People elect one person. Oh, he's going to save us. And then after a little while, they say, oh, he's got so many problems. Let's find somebody else who's going to save us. Let's find somebody else. So we have to really honestly admit that we don't know. So we can look for some evidence that Krishna is actually our best friend. At least according to Shastra, how grateful he is. You just say his name one time. Even if you don't mean to say his name, even if you're just saying, let's go to the Sinarama. And for that one thing, Krishna is so grateful that you progress on the path of bhakti. You don't have to go to the hellish planet. You don't have to take birth as an animal. You know, you eat one prasadam cookie and you take birth in a good family. You touch the Bhagavatam prabhupada. So you just touch and you say, oh, what a nice book. No, I don't think I can buy one today. Just for that, you take birth in a good family. I mean, I don't meet very many people that are that nice. Really haven't. Most people that I've met, even nice people, you can work for them for 10 years, and then if you have a little argument or a little misunderstanding, they become your enemy. And most people that I know are like that. You know, even I have the tendency to be like that, if I'm honest. We're just the opposite. You know, we'll put aside oceans and oceans and oceans of nice relationships for one drop of a difficulty and cut off a relationship with somebody just because of that, or condemn them just because of that. And Krishna is exactly the opposite. He'll ignore oceans and oceans and oceans of faults and envy and violence, and you've done one little thing right, even that you didn't mean to do right. You did it right by accident. You didn't even know what you were doing. You know, Ajamil, who abandoned his wife, abandoned his old parents, became a criminal, was lying and cheating and stealing. And he wasn't trying to worship Krishna, he just loved his child. Even the animals love their children. What kind of a great quality is that? But because his child was named Narayana, oh, he's calling me. So have we ever met a friend like that? Can we be a friend like that? I mean, frankly, I would think somebody like that is kind of naive. Wouldn't you? It's like, wait a minute. He did so many sinful activities. He's been so envious of you. He turned against you, and he wasn't even trying to call you. It's like if you call the wrong number, you know, trying to call somebody, and you get somebody else on the phone. Some friend of yours has offended you and cheated you, and you never hear from them. And then they're dialing somebody else, and they push the wrong number, and they get you. And what do you say? Oh, thank you for calling me. Actually, Krishna is very soft. He is very soft. Even though he has a Dhiradatta personality, he's really very soft. Which is why there's so many people protecting him. You know, Maya's guarding the material world with a trident, and Lord Shiva is guarding all of the dhams. Balaram is guarding the dhams. Because Krishna is so soft. Oh, he just said, Narayana, let him in. Apichet sucharacharo. It doesn't matter. If my devotee does something terrible, if he loves me, that's enough. I don't care. He's a sadhu. Wow. That's a nice friend to have. Who do we ever experience? Even the great devotees are not friends like that. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he explains, considering the 10 offenses, that there's times when the guru should renounce the disciple. Krishna never renounces a living entity. Suvadam sarvabhutanam rinteshayarjunatisthati. Never. There's times when the guru is supposed to say, sorry, goodbye. I renounced you. Even Bhaktivinoda Thakur says sometimes the guru should go publicly and renounce the disciple. But Krishna never renounces living. He stays in the heart. He actually lives in our heart. And he smells our desires. And he still stays. You know, one time... Generally, when I travel, I'm given nice places to stay. Sometimes I'm given very nice places, like when we just were in Villa Vrindavan, where all the bathroom fixtures are covered in gold. Of course, it was cold. We had to light a lot of fires. But sometimes we stay in very nice places, and sometimes somewhere in the middle. But one time, I stayed in a place at a devotee's house, amazingly enough. And I don't know, they somehow had some religious principle that devotees cannot lower themselves to cleaning the bathrooms. I guess they thought if they ever cleaned the bathroom, they would become contaminated. There are people who think like that. So, I don't know if you've ever been on an Indian train. Have you ever been on an Indian train? So, the bathrooms were like something like that. You couldn't breathe. You actually couldn't breathe in the bathroom. You know, it was like, okay, how could I stay in the bathroom for a short enough time that I don't have to breathe while I'm in there? And I was wondering how I could get clean enough to worship my deities, because if you take a bath in a place that's that dirty and that smelly, it doesn't seem like you could be getting clean. You know, I really couldn't comprehend how I could get clean. And all I could think about the whole time, and I had to put my deities on their altar, and there were cockroaches crawling all over the altar, and the altar was covered with dust. And I, frankly, all I could think about when I was there is, when am I going to get out of this place? But Krishna stays. Krishna smells our desires, just like you smell a flower by being next to it. And my dear friends, our desires smell a lot worse than those bathrooms. We may not think like that. We like our desires. They're our good friends. We've been cultivating them for a long time. You know, we think they're quite lovely. Like most of us don't smell our own breath and our own body odor, and we just look in the mirror and go, yeah. But actually, it's not really like that. So Krishna smells our desires, and most of our desires are really pretty nasty. But he doesn't leave. He stays in the heart. So what a friend. Who is a friend like that? Not very many people. So then being Krishna's friend. So what do you do for your friend? You try to make them happy. If they have any lack, you try to meet that lack. You try to give them what they want. So what is Krishna lacking? There's something he's lacking, although he's complete. What is he lacking?
Our companionship.
Yes, he's lacking the love of the conditioned jivas, the love and companionship of the conditioned jivas. So preaching Krishna consciousness is an act of friendship to Krishna, it's an act of compassion to Krishna. Rupa Goswami describes how compassion, we should also show compassion for Krishna. Prabhupada says that Krishna feels the suffering of the living entities because we're part of him. Mamai mamso jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. Just like if you get a little piece of wood under your nail, a little teeny, tiny, itsy, bitsy piece of wood under your nail. So although we jivas are very, very small, I mean, we can't even really talk about how small we are. We're so small. It's an absurd discussion how small we are. But still, when we're not in harmony with Krishna, he feels sad. He feels sad. Not exactly because he's lacking anything, because he's complete without us. Purnasya purnamadaya purnameva vasishyate. But he's sad because he cares about us. Because again, he's our best friend. Even though our suffering is due entirely to our envying him, he's sad about it. Now, if somebody's pain is due to their envying me, I'm usually happy about it. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If someone does something envious of me, and because of that they suffer, I usually rejoice. Ah, just see. Anybody who envies me suffers. Yeah, we see this. Frankly, we see this even among devotees. That person left my temple and went to another temple, and now they're in Maya. Just see, anyone who leaves my temple is going to suffer. I've heard this. So Krishna's not like that. Krishna's like, oh, this person is suffering because they're envious of me. They're suffering because they separated themselves from me. How sad. I don't want them to suffer anymore. So part of being Krishna's friend is bringing others to Krishna consciousness. That's how we show our care for Krishna. Caring about Krishna's plan. I mean, Krishna could take all of the rebellious living entities and leave us forever in the body of Mahavishnu in a state of... unconsciousness. It's a lot of trouble taking care of this world. He has to keep coming over and over again and sending his representatives and fighting with demons and preaching philosophy. You ever given anybody an instruction and 5 minutes later they ask you again the same question? Well, that's what Krishna has to do. He has to keep repeating his instructions over and over again. You know, he repeats his instructions and everybody kind of gets it, and then very quickly it becomes degraded. And it's like, no, that wasn't what I told you to do. Okay, let's try again. And then again it becomes a dharma. And again Krishna has to come or send a representative over and over and over and over again, forever. Oh, so why does he do this? He does it to facilitate the living entities and also to bring us back to our higher consciousness. So if we participate with that, if we help him with that, he's very grateful. That's an act of friendship with him. Right? To really care about him. To appreciate him. What do we want our friends to do? We want them to be appreciative. Have you noticed that you like to tell your friends the things that you want to be appreciated for? If you haven't noticed it, start noticing it. Pay attention. I tell my friends the things I've done that I want somebody to applaud. I share with my friends my accomplishments and my realizations, and why? I want them to be appreciative. I want them to say, wow, that's great. And you did that, and you did that. So Krishna also wants that. Prabhupada says Krishna has all the propensities of a living entity. By the way, sometimes as devotees, we're really ashamed of the fact that we want anybody to appreciate us. It's very odd. That's normal. Okay. Krishna feels like that too. It's okay. It's really okay. We're allowed. We're allowed to be a living being. We really are. We don't have to be, you know, like this table doesn't care if anyone appreciates it or not. It just doesn't care. If I say, wow, what a nice table, it doesn't mean anything to it. It just doesn't care. But we care. We actually care. That's not a sign of pride. It's just a sign of being alive. So Krishna also cares. Now, he wants somebody to say, how nicely you're dressed today, Krishna. I want to look at that. Okay? And you have those gold necklaces kind of in tiers. One after another. T-I-E-R-S, not T-E-A-R-S. And how nicely you're dancing and playing the flute at the same time. It's not so easy, no, to dance and play a flute at the same time. So Krishna wants us to appreciate him. He wants us to appreciate him within this creation. Know that all mighty and glorious things spring from but a spark of my splendor. He wants us to appreciate him in our fire of digestion, in our mental abilities, in our physical abilities, in our power of speech and the sound and ether. So many things. He wants us to be grateful. He wants us to celebrate with him. Don't we want to do that with friends? Don't we like to celebrate with our friends? We call up our friends and, I just got my diploma. What do we want to do? We want them to celebrate with us. Krishna wants us to celebrate with him. He wants us to celebrate his birthday. He wants us to celebrate his victory, celebration. So many things. Krishna wants us to celebrate. He wants us to actually have a party with him all the time. It says Lord Varaha goes to the spiritual world where there's always a party. He wants us to come to his party every day, sing and dance with him. So that's what we like to do with our friends. And he wants us to have confidential talk with him. Because you're not only my devotee, but my friend, Sakha. I'm telling you this rahasyam, I'm telling you this very secret confidential knowledge. What do with friends? We tell them our secrets. We open our heart to them. We want them to listen. We don't want to tell our friends our secrets while they're texting somebody else on the phone. Or 1 minute later they say, what did you say? Huh? So Krishna's telling us his secrets. In the Bhagavad Gita, he wants us to listen. And he wants us to think about it. And act on it. And he wants to hear our confidential talks also. He wants us to talk to him. Prabhupada says Krishna's waiting for us to talk to him. Of course, there's also the rasa of friendship, which is a little different. That's a particular feeling of friendship that particular jivas have with Krishna. So that's different from just the general friendship that all of us should have as part of the process of bhakti. Krishna has his well-wishing friends who are a little older than him, who have a feeling of protecting Krishna, mixed with parental rasa. Then he has his just ordinary friends. They're younger than him, and they have a mood of serving Krishna. Then he has his confidential friends who are around the same age, and they especially like to fight with him. And for those of us who are women in this life, we may not get that. But that's what guys like to do. When women fight, that's the end of their friendship. When men fight, that's how they establish friendships. Yeah, we women don't get this at all. We're like, huh, what are they doing? I once had the misfortune of going to a management meeting in ISKCON that was run by the big boys. I felt like someone had parachuted me down in the middle of an American pro football game. I was like, what am I doing here? I didn't hang around. But anyway, one of the things I noticed was that the guys were fighting with each other and arguing with each other. And then a couple of them did it with me. And at first I felt really, like, insulted. And then I thought, oh, they're trying to initiate me into their boys' club. I don't belong here, get me out of here. So that's Krishna's confidential friends. They're wrestling with him, they're fighting with him, they're arguing with him, they're telling him how they're stronger. And then there's very intimate friends. And Krishna's intimate friends, not only do they do that, but they're also engaged with helping Krishna with his relationship with the gopis. They're passing messages back and forth. Prabhupada said they're whispering in each other's ears about what this gopi looks like and what she said and what message she passed, even though Prabhupada said that none of this is very serious business. And in the mood of these friends of Krishna, like Arjuna, they're always trying, they feel such happiness in doing things for Krishna that they feel their so-called suffering to be a sacrifice of love. Like I said, Arjuna was protecting Krishna on the battlefield, or Vrishabha was picking flowers in the middle of the day in India when it's very hot, but he felt the sun to be like the moon. So when we are in friendship with Krishna, because another thing you do for a friend is you sacrifice for a friend. Isn't that what we do for our friends? And isn't that how we judge whether or not somebody's my friend? You know, if someone says they're my friend and they'll never do any sacrifice for me, what kind of friend are they? Not much of a friend. So being a friend means I sacrifice for my friend, and my sacrifice is joyful. I'm joyfully sacrificing for my friend. For my friend's birthday, you know, I go to the store, I take the time to walk there, I spend the money in petrol, and I spend the time, and I really look at what to buy, and I spend my own hard-earned money on something for them. Those are all sacrifices. Why don't I spend my time and my money doing just something for me? But I do it for my friend. Why? And I'm enjoying it. If I really like somebody, then I'm finding pleasure in going to the shop, and I'm finding pleasure in spending my money. I'm happily turning over my money. And when I think about, when I see my friend using what I bought for them and enjoying it, then I consider my money to be very well spent. Even if it was a lot of money. Haven't we had this experience? You know, we're doing a collection right now for Sarabhava. Have any of you read Salted Bread? We're doing a collection right now to get him a house. You know, he was beaten by the KGB. And I mean really beaten, like people jumping on his back with boots on and knocked out almost all of his teeth and damaged his sight in his right eye. He basically can't see out of his right eye. He was in prison for 2 years and put in psychiatric hospitals and given psychotropic drugs and in Siberian labor camps. Why? Because when they said, where are you printing the Bhagavad Gita's, he said, I'm not going to tell you. Where are you storing the Bhagavad Gita's, I'm not going to tell you. Who are your leaders, where are they, I'm not going to tell you. So he went through that, and now that he's gotten old, those injuries from being in Soviet prisons have gotten to the point that he couldn't work anymore. So we collected money for his back treatment, to get him, he finally has dentures, he said he can chew for the first time in 20 years. And now we're collecting to get him a house. So yesterday somebody sent me an email and said, I just wired $9,000. It was like 9000, and I thought, maybe they put in an extra zero. $9,000. I think people have been giving anywhere from $5,000 to like $800,000. We had one donation of $5,000 from one anonymous ISKCON leader. But 9,000. They must have put in the wrong zero. You know, so I immediately asked my son, I said, can you check? Is it actually 9,000, not 900? And he writes me back, he says, it's real. And there's another donor who's volunteered to give 10,000. So $9,000. But that's blissful. Yeah, that's blissful. We enjoy that. So that's what we do for Krishna. We should relish our sacrifice for Krishna. Whatever sacrifice we make for him, whatever we do for him, actually enjoy it. And then there's no suffering. So no suffering if we see the difficulties in our life that are involuntary as Krishna's kindness, and the voluntary difficulties we take up as a loving sacrifice that we're doing for a friend. Then there's no suffering, whether voluntary or involuntary. Well, then if you love Krishna, you've got to love everyone who's part of Krishna. You know, it's like, dear, I love you, but I really don't like your mother very much. Well, that's not very pleasing. You know, when you marry someone, you marry their family, which is why in traditional societies, they look not only at the spouse, but the spouse's family. intelligent. So, you know, of course, sometimes it happens that you love someone and you don't love their mother or their sister. And you're like, my husband's sister's coming over. But it's not pleasing. So if we love Krishna, we have to love all living entities because he loves all living entities. Now, how does it mean to love all living entities? At least, what do they say in the physician's oath? First, do no harm. At least, don't harm anyone. Minimum friendship with all living entities is that don't harm anyone. How can you say you love God and be an animal killer and animal eater? How can you look at any of those videos from the animal protection societies about what actually goes on in the slaughterhouses and then participate in that and say you're a religious person or a spiritual person? I mean, how can you do that? How can you cause, you know, as much or more pain to the animals as the Nazis did in the concentration camps and then say, oh yeah, but I'm a pious person, I'm a spiritual person? I mean, would anyone accept this? Would anybody accept that those guys who were, you know, doing medical experiments in the concentration camps and torturing the people and murdering them, that they were very spiritual people? So at least do no harm. And do no harm to any living entity. Not, well, I'm going to be nice to my family, I'm going to be nice to my neighbors, I'm going to be nice to people of the same nationality, of the same religion. You know, but if you're a different religion, a different nationality, a different species, forget it. So not harm anyone, and that means not harm anyone physically, not harm anyone mentally, not harm anyone emotionally. Frankly, that's a lot more important than what we do in our life. You know, we may do so many things. That is not nearly as important as how we treat other living entities. In fact, it has almost no importance whatsoever. But how we treat other living entities is very important. And if I mistreat other living entities in the name of getting something done, I've really lost it. And then, of course, higher than that, of being a friend to all living entities, is trying to bring living entities back to Krishna. Trying to give them real happiness in life. And then being friends with devotees. So we don't have time to get into this really much, but Rupa Goswami explains this in the Upadesha Amrita. Didati Prani Pratyagnati. And Prabhupada says there that the Krishna consciousness movement is established to facilitate these six loving exchanges. He gives that as a purpose of the Krishna consciousness movement. Of course, it's one of the seven purposes, to bring the members closer to each other. And Prabhupada says also these six loving dealings, they nourish the activities of Krishna consciousness, so they're basically three exchanges. What are they? Exchanges of?
Gifts.
Prasadam and?
Knowledge.
Confidences. Exchanging from the heart, confidences. And this is both give and take. I should be willing to give gifts. The greatest gift is the gift of love of God, the gift of the holy name, the gift of the Shastra. I should be willing to give gifts, to accept them too. Sometimes we think I shouldn't accept anything from anybody. You know, I don't need anybody. I remember I never wanted to accept anything from anyone. And then one time my husband said, that's not humility, it's pride. I thought, well, I'm really humble, I don't want anyone to serve me. And he said, no, you're just proud, you don't think you need anybody, you think you can do everything yourself. I'm like, oh yeah. So to be willing to accept, to give prasadam, to accept prasadam. Most of us don't have problems accepting prasadam. And to reveal our mind in confidence, that doesn't mean going to people and say, oh, let me tell you about all this nonsense I've been thinking about. But it means especially much to tell Maragatau Pranam Bodhiyatas Prasparam. Katayas Tashtamam Nityam Tushyanti Charamanticha. To have the satisfaction and bliss from talking about Krishna. Of course, if we have doubts, we should have people to whom we can express our doubts. I was recently talking to a couple, and the wife said, I really have some doubts. I said, doubts in what? She said, I really have some doubts about whether or not this process works. And her husband said, really? How could you do that? that. That's terrible. I said, don't do that. I said, if someone has doubts, let them have doubts. And deal with them. Don't shame them for having doubts. Then you just stuff it inside and it'll explode one day. So we need to have some people at least that we can express our doubts. Someone submitted an article to Back to God, I don't know if we'll publish it or not, about what if you don't believe that Krishna's pastimes really happened? Well, then you can follow Bhaktivinoda Thakur's understanding of thinking of them symbolically. And so one of the editors was saying, we cannot ever print anything in Back to Godhead that it's at all possible for anybody to doubt that Krishna's pastimes happened. And I said, but suppose some people do doubt that. And one person wrote, well, none of our readers have any doubts about that. This article is written for another audience. And I said, well, I hate to inform you of this, but I know even initiated devotees who have doubts. And they'll say to me, you know, I'm not really, did Krishna really, I mean, could Putana really be 12 miles long? Did that really happen? Could there really be a giant snake that swallowed up thousands of boys? Did that really happen? I said, there are people who express these doubts. So we have to have somebody that we can reveal our mind to in confidence and say, I'm not really sure, you know, I don't really trust Krishna. I'm not really sure if he's my best friend. I'm not really sure if he killed 12-mile demons. I'm not really sure if God is really blue. I just don't know. You know. So we have to be able to do that too. But mostly we should be talking about how wonderful Krishna is, how much we love him, how exciting we're finding Krishna consciousness, our realizations, and share that with each other. So we looked at four kinds of friendship. I looked at how Krishna is our friend, how trusting that Krishna is our friend allows us to surrender, and once we surrender, then all of our suffering is gone. Wouldn't that be nice? And we'd actually achieve what we want to achieve, which is love for Krishna. How we should also be Krishna's friend, how Krishna's longing for our friendship. He doesn't quite get it, how he's our best friend and we're not really his friend in return. They're just nice to me. And we talked a little bit about the rasa of friendship. And then being a friend to all living entities, at least ahimsa, at least non-violence. So not harming anybody bodily, emotionally, and mentally. And that this ahimsa and friendship with all living entities is much more what we need to get done in our life, even materially speaking. Even if you just want to be a good, pious person and go to heaven, it's a whole lot more important to be kind to all living entities than to just build big hospitals or something like that. And then especially our friendship with the devotees. So sorry, I'm a little over time. So maybe one or two questions. Comments. Yes.
Thank you. Wonderful class. Can you just... You're speaking about Krishna's kindness. What's the best way to understand in the 16th chapter, Krishna says, for those envious and mischievous, I perpetually cast into the ocean of birth and death in different abominable species of life.
Because that's where they want to go. He's putting them where they want to. He's giving them exactly what they want.
Thank you. And just on that.
And how do you know that? Look at what they're doing now.
I think Prabhupada says that in the Purple Death he's mercy.
Yeah, that's what they want. I mean, I was mentioning this when I was just in Italy, and one of the devotees said that he used to be part of that group. So when I was several years ago at Woodstock in Poland, we have a program that devotees do, and one thing is they take around a Rath Yatra through the crowd, small cart. And at one point we went past these people who were wearing all black, and they were playing music that sounded like the growlings of wolves. It was just, very loudly, and I was thinking, what is that? I mean, I assumed that they considered it music. I mean, there was no way that that sound vibration could be categorized as music. So that's what they want. That's what they want. Many of them make their bodies look ugly. And they deform their bodies. I saw somebody like that yesterday out on the streets of London. She had all these piercings in her lip. She looked hideous. She was metal. Oh, And then she'd shaved parts of her head and taken the hair and dyed it in all different colors. And it was, some of it was dyed like feathers. And it was absolutely abominable. She's already preparing to be one of the, you know, Yamadutas. Actually, Yamadutas are pretty nice because they're serving Yamaraj. So she's already getting ready. There's a bunch of them in London, you know? I mean, if you're all the way out in the country. maybe this wouldn't make any sense if you're out of Bhaktivinoda Manor, but here in Soho, you know, every day just go on the street. What are they saying? Krishna, please give me a demon body. Please give me the body of a ghoul and a hobgoblin and a demon. And please let me be in darkness and be able just to make animal noises. That's what they want. They're only out at night, a lot of these people. You know, and sometimes you have the misfortune in the summer, it's just too hot, and you open your window, and when you open your window, you see one of them. It's happened to me on several occasions here in the summer. And that's where they want to go. You know, when they hear there's lakes of fire in hell, they go, yes! I mean, I don't really get it, but that's what they want. It's a way of feeling powerful, I suppose. You know, we all have different ways we envy God. Krishna wants everyone to look at him. So if I can't get everyone to look at me because I'm so beautiful and so wonderful, maybe I can get everybody to look at me because I'm so funny looking. Mm-hmm. You know, when I saw that girl, I couldn't help staring at her. Just couldn't help it. Oh my God. So it's a way of attracting people. And we want to have power. The soul has power. So the power we should want is a power of love. Where people do what we would like them to do voluntarily because they love us and they care about us. But some people want to have, you know, they're not willing to do it that way, so they want power out of fear. You just look at them and you feel scared. You just look at them and go, oh, okay, I'll do whatever you want. You know, you look like a monster, so that's what they want. It's an unfortunate thing to want. There's not, in the mode of ignorance, there's not actually any happiness at all. The mode of passion, at least there's some idea of happiness in the beginning, but mode of ignorance, no happiness. The only kind of thrill you're getting is just from relishing how evil you are. I'm evil. It's terrible. There's nothing that's like bliss in that. So it's very unfortunate. And Mahaprabhu is so merciful. See, Krishna has the mood of more of neutrality. Okay, if that's what they want, fine, I'll give that to them. It's really unfortunate, but that's what they want. And Mahaprabhu's like, no, come on. Why? Because he's in the mood of Radharani. And Radharani has the perfect spiritual female sentimentality. So, materially, female sentimentality gets us into trouble. But when it's there in Radharani, it's just compassion without discrimination. Oh, you want to be a monster? Don't be a monster. Come on, Jan Hari Krishna. That's Radharani. So, whereas Krishna's like, you want to be a monster? Go be a monster, you know? I'm sorry you feel that way. And so when Mahaprabhu, when he takes on the mood of Radharani, he's also, come on, monsters, come and chant with the kirtan party. And so out of friendship with Mahaprabhu, we go out and get the monsters to chant. And some of them join the heart. I just met one. I just met one in Italy. He came up to me after my class, and he said, I was one of them. Like, whoa. He said, I still play that music sometimes when I'm meditating on Nisinga Dave, is that right? And I said, yeah, Prabhupada says if you want the ghastly rasa, you can get it at Nisinga Dave. Yes?
Hare Krishna. You're saying that it's human to be appreciated and want to be appreciated for what you do. So, what's it?
Not just human, it's jiva.
So what's the difference between that and pride?
Pride is I want to be honored. And I want to be honored above others. I want to think that I'm better than others. I want some artificial honor. I want to say that I'm better than others. I want to overlord others. The truth is that you're wonderful, and so is everybody else. the truth. And humility is truth. Humility is not something false. If you try to do false humility, you won't be able to do it. It doesn't work. And then you'll say, oh, that humility doesn't work. Is that all right?
So humility just means to be realistic. Understand your...
Humility means to be totally 100% truthful. Look, how could humility be lying? We're worshipping the absolute truth, and part of worshipping the absolute truth is to be humble. Do you think we could worship the absolute truth and do something that's deceitful? Raghunath Das Goswami says, deceit is the worst enemy of spiritual life. So what's true? What's true is we all happen to be wonderful. Read the list of the 55 qualities that the jiva shares with Krishna. And the other part of the truth is that right now I'm pretty dirty, and that everyone else is as wonderful as I am. I'm not more wonderful than anybody else. Prabhupada says, if you don't live to be recognized by Krishna, your life is condemned. Ultimately, the person we want to appreciate us is Krishna. That's what we should be looking for. We should be looking for Krishna to say, well done, good and faithful servant. If you're not living for that, your life is condemned, Prabhupada says. But of course we want to celebrate things with the other devotees. Of course. You know, the Russian government just threw out the appeal of that people were appealing the case against the Bhagavad Gita. So, you know, the GBC wrote a letter to the devotees who worked so hard for it. The GBC wrote a letter to the devotees who worked hard to fight the case in Hungary. Why did they do that? Is it going to make them proud? You know, what's really interesting, because we're not the doer. What real humility is if somebody appreciates something you've done, you realize you didn't do it. And what you relish is how Krishna decided to use you as an instrument. There's really nothing more pleasurable than that. You know, materially, if somebody uses me as their instrument, it's really disgusting. If somebody uses me materially, it's really horrible. But I think all of us have had our experience of Krishna using us, and it's one of the most wonderful and incredible experiences. That's why I give class, by the way, if you want to know. Why do I do this? Because it's wonderful to feel that Krishna's using me. I love it. There's nothing that's higher than that. And if people say, wow, Rindu, that was a nice class, I'm like, yeah, Krishna, you're cool. Don't you have those experiences?
Yeah.
I hope you have them at least once a day, if not many times a day. You know, I remember when I was a very new devotee. I mean, very new, just a few months. And I had just, Prabhupada's book, Adi Lila Chapter 7, Lord Chaitanya and Five Features, had just been published. It was published as a separate book. And you can tell I'm a little philosophically inclined, right? So I was really enjoying that book. It's very heady, that chapter. And I was memorizing all the arguments for and against impersonalism. And then at a Sunday feast, there was this one guest that came, an Indian gentleman, and he knew all of Sankaracharya's arguments, backwards and forwards, but I knew all the answers because I had just memorized this chapter. So every argument he gave, I was able to give a counter-argument. And I gave the perfect counter-argument because I gave Lord Chaitanya's counter-argument and Prabhupada's counter-argument. And he looked at me and he said, I've never met such an intelligent person in my life. And I was like, yes. What was I relishing? I was relishing Prabhupada and Krishna. And he became a devotee. And of course, I said, actually, this is just from my guru. But of course, I did something. I did do something. I was also there. I wasn't not there. I didn't just hand him the book and walk away. I was also there. So one should actually, there's a kind of pride. One should be proud that Krishna's using me as a servant. Krishna is using me as an instrument. I have such a nice master. And if somebody appreciates that, well, that's what we want people to appreciate. That's the whole point. Is that right?
Thank
you. Yes.
Hare Krishna.
And this has to be the last one, otherwise I'm going to read from.
Thank you for a very nice piece. One of the things that you're famous for is those wonderful books for children that you made.
Uh-huh.
And it just happened that recently one devotee from our group, she's a mother, and she was asking on behalf of her son, who is 4 years old, and they both have this question. So the son was wondering why Krishna is blue, and I thought if you can answer from that perspective, and also how a parent can understand it as well, why Krishna is
blue. Actually, Krishna is all colors. Varaha sometimes appears red, sometimes appears white. As Mahaprabhu, he appears golden. There's Radhalandeshwar, he's appearing white. Krishna's all colors. As Ramachandra, he's green. He comes in many colors. Many colors, many flavors, many moods. Loka Piladev says that he appears in whatever form the devotee wants to worship him. Why in his original form is he that shining color? It's explained that that's the color of love. Hmm. Why particularly? I think you'll have to ask him. Prabhupada wrote one letter to a disciple. He said, I think you have to go to Goloka Vrindavan and then you will find all the answers to these questions. But Krishna appears in many, many, many different colors. But he has his favorite. Just like he wears many different colors of clothing. Today he's wearing red. But yellow is his favorite. He's a person, and he's allowed to have his favorites. So he has his favorite mood, his favorite color to be, his favorite color to wear, his favorite instrument to play. I'm sure he's also perfectly capable of playing a saxophone, a violin. But he really likes his flute. So that's what it means that God is a person. We also have an original spiritual body where we have a certain complexion and we have a favorite color of clothes we like to wear. It doesn't mean we have to wear those clothes exclusively all the time, but we do have a favorite color of clothes. We have favorite food, favorite taste in food. Mahaprabhu would serve the devotees their favorite taste in food. Krishna also, he had to do it with Mother Yasoda and walked out of the room, but he would also, you know, give from his plate to the devotees what they particularly like to eat. So that's what we mean by God as a person. What does it mean? Person means you have things that you like better than you like other things. That you have tastes. You have particular tastes. And why? Can anybody answer that question? Why? You know, if someone says, well, my favorite color is purple. If you say, why? How are you supposed to answer that question? Do you follow what I'm saying? Or like if someone says, well, I don't like Uttama. Well, why not? I don't know. Can you answer that kind of question? It doesn't make any sense. Why do we particularly like one piece of music and not another piece of music? One painting and not another painting? Even if I give my reasons, are they really going to make sense to you? We'll say, well, it doesn't make sense to me. How can you like that? I mean, I know one devotee whose idea of dessert is chili powder and salt. Seriously, he finishes his meal, and then he puts some chili powder and some salt on his plate, picks it up, and eats that for dessert. And I saw him once put it on top of cake. I say, why do you like that? Well, he just does. That's what it means to be a person. Is that right? All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
The Grace Minute, Emma McKee.